Are you afraid of sharks? Do reports about shark attacks on surfers and swimmers make you stay out of the water when you vacation by an ocean? Or are you fascinated by sharks, like my producer Amanda Magnus, who is a big fan of Shark Week this week on the Discovery Channel? And she convinced me we should do a show on sharks. So we are this hour, Sharks 101. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 14th. This is the 25th anniversary of Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. And I happened to catch the first show on Sunday night, which was about some research that is being done on how sharks attack. In this clip from the show, Air Jaws Apocalypse, researcher Chris Fallows discusses what he's learned from filming great white sharks attacking a decoy seal.
One of the things that I've realized from this dramatic attack we saw in Robo Seal is that when the white sharks want something, they really go hard to get it. And bearing in mind 74% of all attacks by white sharks on humans are non-fatal, it's very clear that they're not out there to eat us. If they wanted us, nobody would get away.
We will talk with another guest expert on sharks this hour who will answer your questions and explain why our perception of sharks as man-eating killing machines is wrong. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Mahmood Shivji, a professor at the Oceanographic Center at Nova Southeastern University in Florida. He is the director of the Guy Harvey Research Institute and the director of the Save Our Seas Shark Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So are you watching Shark Week on the Discovery Channel?
You know, I watched the show on Sunday, and then I tried to watch the show last night, but I'm afraid it didn't keep my interest very long.
What do you think of Shark Week? Are you a fan or a foe?
Well, it's a mixed bag. On the positive side, Shark Week has the capability of being a tremendous, tremendous platform for educating the general public about sharks and the plight of sharks, and to correct all the misconceptions about sharks that have been generated in the media over many years now. On the con side, Shark Week in its history, 25 years this year, and in its history has always portrayed sharks, has focused on sharks as these things with big teeth and that bite things and with lots of blood. And their audience is so large that the people have come away with, even though they're fascinated, they've come away with the wrong perception of sharks, completely the wrong perception that sharks are just out there to eat things, and including eating people. So, on balance, I would say that Shark Week has not been a good thing environmentally and for sharks. But to give them some credit, this year they're supposed to be working with some conservation organizations to present a more balanced view and a more accurate portrayal of sharks. And so let's see if that's the way it turns out. And if it does, kudos to them.
And this clip that I played was trying, I think, to dispel the myth to some extent that sharks want to eat people, because they're saying sharks don't want to eat people.
Right, and that particular clip is focused on white sharks specifically. The show on Sunday was all about white sharks. And they're absolutely correct. If white sharks wanted to eat people, then there would be essentially 100% fatalities in every incident between a white shark and a human. But as I was pointing out, it's I think about 74% are non-fatal, and that applies to all other big sharks, really. And if you look at the shark attack statistics and you look at the number of fatalities, you find the fatalities to be extremely low relative to the number of people that are actually bitten. Definitely, sharks are not out there to eat people. We're not part of their natural diet. We don't taste right to them. And when they do bite, they are invariably mistakes.
The clip I saw from that show on Sunday, too, when some of the sharks grabbed the decoy seal, they even spit that out because it did not taste like a seal. They want to eat seals. They don't want to eat other things.
Right, absolutely. You know, I mean, the decoys are made of synthetic material, usually, you know, styrofoam and rubber and so on. And you know, sharks, they know the difference between real food and toys.
So the shark attacks that we hear of in the media from time to time, this is generally a case of mistaken identity?
Yes, that's what most scientists, in fact, all scientists believe, is that... what happens in the vast majority of cases is that the shark will take a nip, take a bite, and then release the individual. Now, the problem is that, you know, sharks, you know, they are predators, and they are hunting for their prey. And if they make a mistake and end up biting a human, they quickly release that individual because, you know, we just don't taste right. Now, the downside is that, you know, sharks don't have hands to check out their prey, if you will. All they have is their mouth and their teeth, and the teeth are big and they're sharp. And so when they do bite, and even if they do release the individual, a lot of damage is done. Mm.
So why do you suppose there is so much misinformation about sharks?
Well, you know, the consensus seems to be that Shark Week, that most people that know anything about sharks at all get their information from Shark Week. I think the audience, I think I've read this somewhere on the order of around 30 million people or watch Shark Week. You know, it's a ratings game. Just like many news shows, if it bleeds, it leads, sort of thing. And people are fascinated by sharks when they're portrayed as these animals with big teeth and that attack things. And so it makes it more interesting, and it keeps the audience coming back and watching these shows. And you know, somebody pointed out that if Shark Week focused on just, you know, sharks just swimming around and this is general biology, that wouldn't be as interesting to the general public and the ratings would go down. So that's why they keep on pushing the visuals of sharks' big teeth and attacks.
Well, let's talk about, let's get some accurate information out there about sharks. How many different species of sharks are there?
Currently, the best estimates are there are between 500 and 510 different species of sharks. That number is going to go up because new species are being discovered, you know, all the time. There are sharks that live in the very deep ocean that has hardly been explored. And so right now, I would say it's about 500 species.
And they are all like the white shark or all different?
Right. No, that's a really good question. The diversity of sharks is tremendous. You know, we have sharks ranging from the biggest sharks in the world. The biggest shark in the world is something called a whale shark. The second largest is a basking shark, and they get up to, you know, 50 to 60 feet. And both those sharks are filter feeders, meaning that they just mostly feed on plankton and fish eggs and very, very small fish. You go from that size all the way down to the smallest shark in the world, discovered, is only about the size of an adult's hand. It's about 7 to 8 inches in size, fully grown. And then you have everything in between. So most sharks, the majority of sharks out of the 500-plus species, are small and harmless to humans, and also... many of the sharks live in habitats where humans will never encounter them. You know, they're in the deep sea, typically. And so it's only a handful of sharks that are implicated in attacks on humans. It's the white shark, the tiger shark, the bull shark. They're the big three, if you will. But the media tends to focus on them just about all the time. And they don't provide the correct perspective of this huge diversity of sharks that occurs in the world, in the oceans. So most people think that all sharks are like white sharks and bull sharks and tiger sharks.
The only shark I've ever seen was when I was snorkeling in, where was I? Oh my goodness, I think I was in Hawaii. And I think I was, the guide said it was a reef shark. And it was under a coral reef, and it was hiding. It didn't want anything to do with us.
Right. You know, it was probably something called a white-tip reef shark. There are a few sharks that just live in coral reefs, and they're very shy. And, you know, we've been, as a shark scientist, You know, we dive with sharks frequently, and you know, in every case so far, and you know, they just will try and avoid you. They just don't come anywhere close to you, really.
But
now,
go ahead.
So you know, one thing though, for example, in Florida and the Bahamas, for example, there have been shark attacks, which you know get blown up in the media. But in many cases, there are people that have been spearfishing. And so if you're spearfishing and you have a bunch of fish with you that you're carrying around underwater and a shark approaches you, the shark wants that fish. And if you sort of, you know, say, well, sorry, no, these are my fish, then you're asking for trouble. You know, then you're doing something quite silly, and then you have a shark attack.
Yeah, give up the ship, back away.
Yeah, back away. You know, you're in their house. Fundamentally, you're eating their food, and if they want it, then give it to them. But you know, that's only in cases where, because you smell a fish, right? You've got fish all around you.
Yeah, the once in a while I'll see reports on television about, I believe they are the great white, really, really close to a beach, close to shore. Is that unusual or is that typical?
You know, it depends on where you are. For example, in South Africa, there are, you know, for example, that shark show on Sunday was about this place in South Africa where white sharks aggregate because they feed on these seals that come there. And the island that the seals go and stay on is very close to the beaches. And so certainly, and so the white sharks are hanging around there. And so certainly the white sharks are close to shore and people in the water. And if you go up in planes, and you can actually see the sharks in the water. Now, take that scenario. There's white sharks in the water very close to humans on the beaches. The number of shark attacks from white sharks on humans is extremely low. You know, the sharks are there. They know that people are there, but they ignore them.
We are talking about sharks. In honor of Shark Week, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year on the Discovery Channel, and we're welcoming your questions about sharks. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be a sunny, mild day today. We can expect a high temperature of 80 degrees, clear tonight with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, another mostly sunny day with a few clouds and a chance of rain. Highs tomorrow in the low to mid 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this primary election day, Tuesday, August the 14th. Tonight at 8 o'clock, the Ideas Network will bring you live coverage of Wisconsin primary election results hosted by Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg. You can join us for commentary from political experts and the candidates and from reporters around the state. That's tonight at 8 o'clock, our primary election night special here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow morning, by the way, between 6 and 8, we will have more reaction and analysis of the election results, and we'll look at the campaign trail toward November tomorrow on the Ideas Network. Right now, we are talking about sharks. Our guest is Mahmood Shivji, a professor at the Oceanographic Center at Nova Southeastern University in Florida. He is the director of the Guy Harvey Research Institute and director of the Save Our Seas Shark Center. And we're welcoming your questions about sharks. We're welcoming any encounters you've had with sharks. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you watching Shark Week on the Discovery Channel this week? Do you think these shows are good or bad for sharks, and why? Let's take a call from Pat in Madison. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning. I probably, like many people, got interested in sharks back when the movie Jaws came out, and of course was a bit afraid to go in the ocean at that time. But I've since become a certified scuba diver, and have been with my friends many times trying to actually find them. They're very sharks are skittish and shy, as your guest was sort of intimating. And when we have seen them, they just take off. They have no interest in us. And I also had the opportunity to fly on the Goodyear blimp once, and had been body surfing off the coast of Florida just an hour or two before. And when we were over the coast in the blimp, I looked down and I said to the pilot, "That's where I was body surfing. What are all those shadows?" And he said, "Those are sharks.
Oh.
They feed at the discharge point of the intercoastal. And they were there the whole time I was body surfing, and I didn't know it." And so ever since those experiences, I've totally changed my attitude about sharks.
Well, good for you, Pat. That's you're very brave too. Do those sharks pose any danger, do you think, Professor Shivji, to Pat?
No, not typically. You know, Pat is completely correct. When we go into the ocean, in some places, especially in tropical places, you know, Florida or warm places, there are sharks in the water. They see us, we don't see them, and there are no incidences. Do the sharks pose any danger? There is a very, very, very small risk because you're in the ocean with, a predator, a major predator. But people have calculated the risks of being bitten by a shark, there are about 300 million people that go into the ocean in the United States every year. Okay, so it's a huge number of people, and the risk of a shark attack is about 1 in 11.5 million.
Wow.
Now compare that to the risk of drowning. That's 1 in 3.5 million. So the risk of drowning is, three times higher, more than three times higher than it is being attacked by a shark if you go into the ocean. So just to put that in perspective, there's also an interesting statistic, it's an amusing statistic, really, that in New York City, about 1,500 people a year get bitten by humans, enough to warrant medical attention. In contrast to that, about 39 people a year on average in the U.S. get bitten by sharks.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
So who's more dangerous?
Right. You know, I shared a photo that was meant to be a joke. It was a shark watching TV all afraid, and it was watching Human Week.
Oh, I get it. I like that.
And in a way, humans are perhaps a bigger threat to sharks than the other way around?
Oh, no, not perhaps. It's absolutely the case. And in fact, that's an important point that you've brought up. You know, we've done some studies that have shown that a median of 38 million sharks were killed to supply the international fin trade in the year 2000. And so it's, 38 million is a staggering number of anything. And here you're taking out a major apex predator from the ocean that is a very critical component of maintaining a balanced and healthy oceanic ecosystem. It's not sharks eating humans. It's really, trouble is the humans are eating sharks in far too large a number. And that has a lot of scientists really worried about the impacts on ocean ecosystems.
Tell us about this fin trade. I saw some stories on this recently, and they just want the fin?
Right. The fins are considered a delicacy in some Asian cultures, and it's important to note that this is not a new culinary item. Shark fins have been consumed in the Chinese culture for over 1,500 years. The only problem is that in historically, shark fins were consumed by the Chinese aristocracy and royalty, and because they were very difficult to get and therefore very expensive. But with the booming Asian economies, shark fins have become a very desirable item in a food item. It's sort of analogous to the way we treat caviar in the West, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sort of chic and prestigious sort of seafood item to provide to your guests. And as Chinese economies have become much stronger, people can afford to buy these shark fins, and that's created a lot more demand for shark fins, and therefore a lot more fishery pressure on sharks. And that's really the primary, the demand for shark fins is the primary driving force behind the over-harvest, the over-exploitation of sharks all around the world.
And is anything being done to try to stop or regulate this fin trade?
Well, yes, there are attempts by a variety of governments and private organizations to try and curtail the fin trade. But you know, here's the problem. This is a seafood product that's been utilized for a very long time. There are governments that are recognizing the plight of sharks that have actually created sanctuaries for sharks in their waters, meaning there's no shark fishing allowed at all. Right now, there's only a few countries that do that, for example, Palau, the Maldives, Honduras. Other countries, like the U.S., for example, has very, very good, strong regulations for managing shark fisheries. Probably the U.S. is probably amongst the strongest regulations for managing shark fisheries. But most countries in the world have essentially little or no regulation, and even if they have regulations to say, well, you know, you can only catch, you know, X number of sharks, and if you catch any more than that, then the fishery gets shut down. Enforcement is very difficult because it all costs a lot of money. And the profit motive behind capturing sharks for their fins is so high that there's a huge incentive for people to do illegal fishing. So it's a very difficult problem.
We will talk more about the importance of sharks in the ecosystem of our oceans, and we will take more of your questions about sharks, more of your encounters with sharks. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll continue talking about sharks because this is Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. Our guest is also trying to dispel some misperceptions about sharks. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is primary election day in Wisconsin, and we encourage you to catch our election night special starting at 8 o'clock tonight, and join us tomorrow morning at this time when we talk about the results of the races for Congress and U.S. Senate and other contests of statewide interest. In our next hour, we will also talk about what it is like to be a candidate running for office, from the constant media scrutiny, the travel schedule, the fundraising, fending off political attacks, and more. Why would anyone actually want to do this? That's coming up after 7 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, August the 14th. This hour, we are talking about sharks. This week marks the 25th anniversary of Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, and we thought that we would dispel some myths about sharks, and our guest expert could answer your shark-related questions. Our Shark Hour in honor of Shark Week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you watching Shark Week? Are you fascinated by sharks? Are you fearful of sharks? Do you have any questions about sharks? We hope you will join us. Our guest is Mahmood Shivji, a professor at the Oceanographic Center at Nova Southeastern University in Florida, the director of the Guy Harvey Research Institute, and director of the Save Our Seas Shark Center. And we have a listener named Joe who sent an email, and he says, sharks must have the largest size range of any other species. Why is that, Professor Shivji?
Well, Joe is correct for the most part, in the sense that there are several species of sharks that occur all around the world. You know, white sharks are a good example, and the tiger sharks are another good example. And the reason for that is that these are highly mobile animals, and you know they can swim very long distances. The planet is made up of about 70% ocean. There are no physical barriers typically to prevent, you know, a highly mobile animal from going from one place to another. It's not like they have to cross any you know, land bridges or anything like that. They just go around land. And we think that that's the reason why these sharks have been so successful, these highly mobile sharks have been so successful at expanding their range and occupying such a major part of the planet's oceans.
Can you talk some about how sharks evolved? They've been with us since, what, before the dinosaurs?
According to the fossil record, sharks first appeared in the fossil record over 400 million years ago. So, yes, well before dinosaurs.
And how did they evolve?
They evolved in the sense that, you know, life evolved in the oceans, and sharks are just one lineage of life that evolved in the oceans. It's just that their lineage just evolved very early on before vertebrates and sharks and vertebrates came onto land. And over the approximately 400 years, there's been a tremendous change in types of sharks. I mean, according to the fossil record, there's a huge diversity of sharks with, you know, very odd-looking sharks. Megalodon is one example. They had a thing on that on Shark Week last night, which is now extinct. And along the way, sharks have evolved. They've been very successful. They've evolved, and they've developed some very, very amazing sensory capabilities that far exceed anything that humans have in terms of their smell, in terms of their eyesight, in terms of their ability to detect electric fields. So they are, in an evolutionary sense, in fact, you know, I would consider them to be marvels of evolution, really, because of the way they've developed. And in an evolutionary sense, they've been extremely successful. Now, the problem is that they've been very successful evolutionarily, but they're no match for humans and their fishing technology. And so, you know, commercial fishing started really in a big scale about 60 years ago. And over the last 20 or 25 years, fishing technology has improved to the point where, you know, we're catching so much from the oceans, and sharks are no match for that technology.
Yeah,
so they're not doing well in an evolutionary sense now.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that. Are sharks at risk because of overfishing?
Oh, absolutely. There is tons of evidence that many species of sharks are at risk of extinction. And there are some studies that have shown that about 30% of all the sharks that we know about are at high risk of extinction, mostly because of overfishing, and to some extent, you know, an additional stressor is the fact that we're ruining our ocean habitat with overdevelopment and ocean acidification and climate change.
And I was going to say, why should we care? Why should we care if sharks go extinct?
Right. No, that's an excellent question. You know, now especially the larger sharks, which are most commonly caught in fisheries around the world, are what we call apex predators in the ocean. That means they're at the very top of the food chain. And because of that, they have a very key role in maintaining proper balance of the ocean's food web. Now, let's look at an example, an analogy. I think a good analogy is to think of sharks as playing the same role as lions and tigers and wolves in land ecosystems. And there's lots of evidence that when populations of these land apex predators go down, you have what are called negative cascading or rippling effects on the entire ecosystem below them, because these are top-level predators. As an example, if you were to kill up all the lions in the Serengeti, the populations of their key prey, which are, you know, antelope and zebra, would explode. There's evidence of that. And which in turn, when those populations explode, they eat up all the vegetation and leaving other herbivores to starve. Now, if we take that analogy to the shark world, there are studies, and there's one study I'll mention that's an excellent study that came from Florida International University, is that they did a study in Western Australia on tiger sharks. And in Western Australia, you have all these seagrass beds, and seagrass beds everywhere, actually, are critical habitat for hundreds of fish and invertebrate babies. That's critical habitat for these babies to grow up. Now, dugongs and sea turtles live there, and they eat seagrass. And tiger sharks control dugong and sea turtle populations because they prey on them. And they've found that when tiger sharks are not there, dugongs and sea turtles go in there and really cut back on all the seagrass because they eat it. But then when tiger sharks come in, the dugongs and sea turtles leave, allowing the seagrass to grow back and maintaining that ecosystem for all the babies of the fishes and invertebrates. So as apex predators, sharks play a very important role by controlling their populations of their prey, which in turn can impact ecosystems below them. So it's a chain. You know, it's a chain in the entire sort of food web.
And last week, some environmental groups petitioned the federal government to list a Pacific Ocean species of a great white shark as endangered. Can you talk about that and how important it is in your perspective to list the shark as endangered?
You know, I think it's based on the evidence, it appears very important. And the reason these groups, or three groups that petitioned for white sharks to be listed, is that there's some recent studies that have shown that that population of sharks just there in that region, in the northeastern Pacific, has gone down to about less than 350 animals, which is a very, very small number to maintain any species. And so the petition says that these sharks are at great risk because they're so rare to start off with, because their populations are so low, that their survival is now really threatened. And they're still caught as bycatch in fisheries all along that coast. And especially young white sharks are caught in these fisheries. And so if you combine bycatch in fisheries, overdevelopment, pollution, contamination of beaches, it turns out that they found that these sharks have extremely high levels of mercury and organic pollutants in their flesh. So they're being exposed to pollutants coming from land. So if you put all those things together, the very small population size and all these other stresses, it tells you that population is sort of on the brink of survival. And if attempts are not made to really help them recover, you could lose that entire population of white sharks. And they're genetically very different from white sharks anywhere else. So they're not going to be replaced by white sharks coming from other places. So they need extra protection.
Should we avoid eating shark at a restaurant or buying it from a seafood center?
Yes. I would say that the sharks that end up in the market are usually the larger sharks that are overfished in global fisheries. And so when they end up on your dinner plate in restaurants, you're just contributing to the problem by continuing the demand for that product. And so if one is to be responsible in terms of environmental stewardship, and then absolutely, for example, yes, I you know, don't eat sharks. And of course, some wit has pointed out that, you know, if you don't eat sharks, they don't eat you. So there you go.
Our guest is Mahmood Shivji. He is with the Nova Southeastern University in Florida, director of the Guy Harvey Research Institute, director of the Save Our Seas Shark Center, and we are talking about all things shark-related, and we are welcoming your questions about sharks. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are discussing sharks because the popular Shark Week is going on this week on the Discovery Channel. It's the 25th anniversary of Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, and we're wondering if you, too, are fascinated by sharks. Checking our weather forecast for today, it is going to be a sunny, mild day today. We can expect a high temperature around 80 degrees. Clear tonight with lows in the 50s, and mostly sunny tomorrow. There is a chance of rain developing tomorrow with highs in the low to mid 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 14th. Coming up, we head to the polls today for primary election day in Wisconsin. There's a Republican primary for U.S. Senate as well as some other contests. We will talk with a guest who knows what it's like to run for office. We will talk with former state legislator Mordecai Lee, who is now a professor of government affairs at UW-Milwaukee. We'll talk about why anyone would actually want to run for office. We'll wonder if you've ever considered that. We'll wonder if maybe you have run for office. We'll talk about what it's like to be a candidate coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we are talking about what it's like to be a shark. No, we are talking about sharks. We have a guest expert on sharks who is answering any shark questions you might have, trying to dispel some myths, discussing why our perception of sharks as man-eating killing machines is wrong. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page talking about shark evolution, shark biology, shark behavior. Jeremy on Facebook asks, do sharks hunt in packs or in a family? Professor Shivji?
The answer to that is typically no. Most shark species don't hunt in packs. A few shark species do tend to form small schools and hang out together. There are other sharks that form groups when they're migrating. But in general, sharks are very solitary animals, especially as adults, and they hunt as individuals.
Jeremy goes on to say, if sharks are solitary, are they at risk of being hunted by killer whales?
Certainly sharks are prey for killer whales. There have been a few documented cases of killer whales actually attacking and eating sharks, yes. But you know, the distribution of killer whales is typically in colder waters. And the vast majority of sharks, the vast diversity of sharks tends to occur, and the vast diversity of sharks in shallow waters, I should say, tends to occur in warmer waters. So there's not much of an overlap in the distribution of killer whales and sharks.
How do sharks hunt their prey in terms of, do they rely on scent? Do they rely on eyesight?
Well, sharks have extremely finely tuned sensory system. It's really a marvel of evolution. They rely on all the senses that you know we think about. Certainly eyesight, smell, but in addition to that, sharks can and hearing. But in addition to that, sharks can detect vibrations in the water that humans would never feel, and they can also detect. They're very sensitive to electric fields that all living things give off. That humans don't detect, at least we don't think we can detect them, but sharks can detect electrical fields being given off by prey. So a really good example is that there are some sharks that will eat stingrays, and many times these stingrays bury themselves in the sand at the bottom of the ocean, so they can't be seen very well. But sharks, you know, for example, like hammerheads, specialize on eating stingrays. And so they're able to find them because of the electric fields that those rays give off. And they're able to sort of find them, even though they can't see them, pounce on them and eat them.
And it's believed that when there are shark attacks on humans, especially perhaps maybe somebody on a bodyboard or a surfboard, and they're paddling their feet, that the shark feels that vibration. It looks at that. You know, we look like seals.
Absolutely, for sharks that specialize in eating marine mammals, you know, white sharks are a good example. You can sort of imagine it, right? You've got somebody on a surfboard. All you see is their hands and feet dangling over the side. It looks like the flippers of a marine mammal. And so a shark looking upwards, he could easily mistake that human on a surfboard as a marine mammal and then, you know, take a bite.
And as we talked about earlier in the hour, many times, whatever it was, 74% of the time, the shark will bite and then say, yuck, and move on. And that's why they're not fatal attacks. The shark doesn't want to eat us. for the
absolutely.
Most part.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the statistics really back that up. And let's just, you know, for example, let's just look at numbers for shark attacks around the world over the last 12 years. The numbers are that on average, 67 people around the world experience a shark attack. And out of those 67, the average fatalities was 6. So if sharks really wanted to eat people, the number of fatalities would be essentially 65. You know, it wouldn't be 6.
Our next caller is Jackie in Brookfield. Hello, Jackie.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, on the Sharkzilla show last night, they did not really address that why Megalodon was extinct 2 million years ago, long after the dinosaurs died, but its much smaller cousin, the great white, is so much smaller than Megalodon. What can you say about the difference in size from Megalodon being so big to the great white that we know today being so small?
Right. You know, great white sharks can get up to about, I think the largest records might get up to about 22 feet. They typically, it's rare to find them above 16, 17, 18 feet nowadays. A megalodon, you know, I don't recall the exact details, but a megalodon would probably be around 50 or 60 feet. I think that's what they figured out from the fossil record. And there is there's nothing like that in the ocean anymore. There's no major predator like that in the ocean anymore, you know, that gets to that size. Why did megalodon go extinct? The reason for that is not clear, but one makes the assumption that megalodon went extinct for the same reasons that other things go extinct. The environment changed, and megalodon was not well adapted to that environmental change that occurred. And was not successful at hunting its prey, and there eventually did not reproduce enough, and then just went extinct.
All right. So, if you were able to produce one of the shows on during Shark Week on the Discovery Channel, what new information might you give us on that show?
I think that what I would focus on would be two primary issues. One is that the amazing diversity of sharks, all the way from things that are the size of one's hand, all the way to the largest sharks of the world, like the whale sharks and basking sharks, the amazing diversity in the way they look, the way they function, in the way they feed, the way they reproduce. So that's one aspect. And the other aspect I would focus on was the fact that we have and completely unsustainable and unethical over-exploitation of sharks. And the sharks, because of their reproductive life history, so for example, you know, they mature very late, they produce very few young at a time, they grow very slowly. All these things make sharks sort of incapable of replenishing their populations like other fishes do, like bony fishes do. And so they can't keep up with the rate of exploitation going on. These are the two things that I think the public really needs to understand. They're fascinating animals. They're beautiful animals. They need to know that it's more than just white sharks and tiger sharks and bull sharks, and the fact that they're being slaughtered unsustainably all around the world.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I really have a new respect for sharks. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Mahmood Shivji, professor at the Nova Southeastern University in Florida. He is the director of the Save Our Seas Shark Center, talking with us about sharks as this week marks the 25th anniversary of Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for producing this hour. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.